religious liberty and some of the other First Amendment freedoms, they kind of hang together.
Dr. Ryan Anderson of the Heritage Foundation talking about his presentation at the Fall 2018 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference in Dallas, Texas.
That there's an ecosystem of liberty, and that what they're meant, these various natural rights that we have, they're meant to respect aspects of human dignity, the dignity of the human person to be free to live according to their conscience, to their deepest beliefs, especially beliefs about God, and therefore they're meant to promote human flourishing, that freedom is intricately connected to truth, and that living in accordance with the truth is how we flourish.
You can meet and hear Ryan Anderson making the case for our first freedoms at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference Friday, November 9th and Saturday, November 10th in Dallas. Attendance is limited to 400. Find out more and register at issuesetc.org.
It's turned into a club with which to beat up the people that they blame the most for giving them Donald Trump.
We need to have these power seekers using their ambition against other power seekers' ambition as they protect their own turf. And this is what makes our government a self-limiting government.
Jesus is the one who fulfills the law for us. He's the one who feared and loved and trusted in his Father above all things.
Central Texas welder fabricators love to turn and burn while listening to Issues, Etc.
It can be difficult to navigate all the nomenclature and the slang and the terms of art and the politically correct terms. There was a time when the word gay was kind of on the edge. It was one of those edgy terms that you might use for someone who is, what shall we say? The clinical term would be homosexual, same-sex attracted. Everyone struggles with this, especially because the goalposts are always moving around when it comes to what you can and cannot say. But if you are a Roman Catholic bishop, you're going to struggle mightily because you have to say things in a way that will stand the test of time, cannot be misunderstood, and are as clear as possible. And then when you have Pope Francis running around using words that are, well, are they accurate for what he's trying to describe? Makes matters somewhat difficult. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in live on this Thursday afternoon, the 25th of October. We're going to be talking about Catholic bishops and what to call homosexuals. They're struggling at the Vatican with this issue. Dr. Jennifer Roback-Morse of the Ruth Institute will be our guest a little bit later. We'll conclude our series on the Christian conscience in Isaiah with Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer, author of the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for October, Reading Isaiah with Luther. Terry Mattingly of the On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate joins us to talk about the media. Blue Dog Democrats, a term that is also shifting its definition, and religion in the midterm elections. Then Pastor Hisham Shahab is going to join us as part of our Issues Etc. Reformation Week. We're talking about paths to Lutheranism. He grew up not only in Islam, but in the Muslim Brotherhood. We'll talk about his path to the Lutheran Confession. Feel free to join us with questions or comments or call in number 1-877-623-MYIE. Send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org, a tweet at issuesetc, and the Issues Etc. listener comment line 618-223-8382. Joining us to talk about Catholic bishops and what to call homosexuals, Dr. Jennifer Roback-Morse. She's a regular guest, founder and president of the Ruth Institute. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason Universities. She's senior research fellow in economics for the Acton Institute and author of several books, including her latest, The Sexual State. Jennifer, welcome back.
Hey, Tom, thanks for having me back on. I've missed you.
Me too. I missed you as well. Here's something from the Reverend James Martin. You're familiar with this Jesuit priest who's also authored a book called Building a Bridge. He says recently from the Religion News Service about Catholic bishops struggling what to call homosexuals. He says, if the church continues to use antiquated, outdated, and overly clinical terms like same-sex attracted, rather than the name the group uses for itself, the church will simply make dialogue more difficult and make these Catholics feel even less welcome in what is, after all, their church, too. How do you react to that?
Well, we have to ask ourselves, who's calling themselves LGBT and why are they calling themselves LGBT and what do they mean when they use that term? And the reason the church has resisted using that kind of language is because that it's very imprecise. Even the term gay doesn't have a commonly accepted scientific meaning, you know. You could mean a person who's same-sex attracted. You could mean a person who is sexually active. You could mean a person who has same-sex fantasies. It could mean all kinds, you know. We don't really, when somebody says, I'm gay, we don't even know exactly what that means, which is why in science, people don't use that term a lot of the time. They use something more descriptive when they're trying to analyze something. So the church has always resisted using this kind of term because basically, frankly, LGBT is a political term. It's not a philosophical term. It's not a medical term. It's a political term, and it really doesn't have any place in a church document. You can be welcoming to people without politicizing their position and your position.
So what do you make of the fact that, and it's actually referenced again in the Religion News Service story from Reverend James Martin. He says, in addition, besides, if Pope Francis uses the word gay, so can everyone else.
Well, I think Pope Francis has been widely criticized for using that word for exactly the reasons that I just named. You know, it lacks philosophical precision. And furthermore, the book that Martin wrote called Building a Bridge, Father Philip Bochansky has the best response to that. Father Philip Bochansky is a head of the Courage Apostolate, which is the Roman Catholic outreach to same-sex attracted Catholics, trying to help them live holy and chaste lives. And what Father Bochansky says is, he says, look, you can build a bridge. The people don't live on the bridge. People go to one side of the bridge or the other. And the question is, which direction is Father Martin leading people? And as faithful Roman Catholics and as faithful Lutherans, of course, we want to be leading people closer to Christ, which means a life of chastity and sexual self-command. So that's the problem with Father Martin's imprecision. I think there's a lot of deliberate imprecision. And so, you know, he can say he's in keeping with church teaching, but when it gets right down to it, a lot of times you're not really sure where he's leading people. And so that's the problem with importing imprecise terminology into church documents.
Philadelphia Archbishop Charles Chaput has said that there is no such thing as an LGBTQ Catholic or a transgender Catholic or a heterosexual Catholic, as if our sexual appetites defined who we are. What is he saying there, Jennifer?
So that's the nub of the philosophical issue right there, Todd. The nub of the issue is that if you use those terminologies that describe your sexual pattern of sexual attraction, you could legitimately use it as an adjective, but you cannot use it as a noun. You cannot say, I'm gay, you know, that's who I am. That is precisely the thing that people are, that the traditional wing of the Catholic Church is trying to avoid. We're trying to say every single human person is created in the image and likeness of God. We're created either male or female, except for an insignificantly small number of cases where there may be some kind of physical medical ambiguity. But everyone knows that those physical ambiguities are not the things that we're talking about here, right? Is there something else that's being discussed? We're talking about a pattern of sexual attraction, but that is not your identity. And that is precisely the issue. What the world wants to say, what the modern world wants to say, is that acting on your desires is constitutive of who you are as a person. And that's precisely what Archbishop Chaput and I and Dan Matz and a lot of other people, that is exactly what the church has traditionally contested. That's not your identity. So, and even, you know, if you look at it historically, Todd, all of the Christian confessions always said that there have always been homosexual acts, or have always been people doing same-sex sexual activity. That goes back, you know, way back, obviously, and plenty of evidence of that. But the idea that a person was a homosexual, that's something relatively new. You know, that's something that came about in the 19th century as we started to medicalize behavior. It became a medical condition almost, and that's the point of departure, really, that there's no such thing as a homosexual or a heterosexual. They're just men and women, you know, who do certain kinds of acts and who can do different kinds of acts if they want to do different kinds of acts badly enough. And that in no case do your acts define who you are. That's the point right there, Todd. And that's why it's so contentious.
Is this almost impossible? I think that the bishops can clarify their language and put it in a way that is churchly. And you know what I'm talking about there. They need to say things with a theological and, as you have pointed out, a philosophical precision, because they're not just writing for us, they're writing for the ages, they're speaking for the ages. But I think they can do that. Is it practically impossible for the average Roman Catholic to sort this out, given we're living in an age of identity politics?
Well, identity politics is precisely the thing that has to be challenged. That's the point. We can't take for granted that identity politics is what's going to shape our everything about our discourse. We have to challenge it, and we have to challenge it every time. You know, I put up on my Facebook page, on the Ruth Institute Facebook page, in anticipation of our interview here, I put a few articles up in case some of your listeners might want to learn a bit more about this synod and some of the back and forth about it. And one of the interesting points that comes out is that there's a bishop from Cameroon. You know, it's not just that the Catholic bishops have to write for the ages. They also have to write for the whole world. And so there's a bishop from the Cameroon saying, hey, you know, if I say LGBT in my diocese in the Cameroon, 99% of the people will have no idea what I'm even talking about. Right? It's not even a thing. You know, they want to talk about the youth over there have different issues. Family problems over there have different issues. The LGBT agenda, that's just not even on their horizon, you know. And so they're operating still within the classical view of the human person, which is not really compatible with modern identity politics, Todd. That's the way I would put it. And I think to say that what we can't do is we can't say, okay, we're going to split the difference between the traditional beliefs and modern identity politics. That can't be done. One view is going to drive out the other. And that's why the stakes are so high. And why it seems like, gee, this seems like a lot of fuss over a few words, but there's a lot of meaning packed into those words.
So in a practical sense, you have to talk about these issues all the time. And just for your own mental stability and well-being, you can't constantly be filtering the way that you describe these things. You have to be able to speak in a way that's both coherent, accurate, but also is able to be readily understood by your audience. What do you do with the terms? How do you put it? How do you describe both homosexual behavior, adjective, and those who would regard themselves in terms of their identity as homosexual?
So, Todd, what I do and what I counsel people to do is to give up the idea that you're going to come up with one word that's going to do the job in every instance, because that's probably not practical. What you're looking for is a phrase that is descriptive for the particular situation you're talking about. And when you do that, you discover that these words cover a whole range of meanings and connotations and have, in a sense, literally baggage attached to them. And so if you unpack them and use the phrase that's really, truly descriptive, then you start to see, oh, well, now I know what you're talking about. Oh, here's clarity about what I mean. So, for example, in the thing that you just said, I would say a self-described homosexual. You could just say that. This person self-identifies as homosexual. Okay, that's great. Or he self-identifies as gay. Or he you're acknowledging that that's what they think, but you're not saying that you agree with that or that you have no reservation about that. Sometimes it depends on what you're talking about. Here's the clearest example I can give you, Todd. When medical researchers are researching stuff, trust me, they don't really care how you're voting or what your fantasy life is or anything like that. What they care about is, who are you having sex with? How many times did you do it? How recently did you do it? And so on and so forth. So the term they use generally in the scientific medical epidemiology literature, what they'll use is the term men having sex with men, MSM. They are not using that. They don't mean that as a euphemism. They mean it to be precise, right? So whether you self-identify or not is not the issue. They're tracing the microbes. They just want to know, what did you do? So that phrase then does the job that they needed to do. It may not be the same job that you needed to do if you're going to talk about politics or something like that. You may need a different descriptive phrase. You see what I mean?
Yeah. So in other words, they're clinical about it.
That's right. You got to be. It's not that you have to be clinical. I mean, Father Martin uses that term clinical like it's a bad thing. And of course, if you're having a pastoral conversation with somebody, you don't want to be clinical with them. But I think in all cases, you want to be accurate about what you mean, about what you're talking about, what they're talking about. So, and sometimes I'll say this to, if I have a group of parents, for example, if I were coming to your Making the Case conference again and giving this kind of conversation, by the way, I'm so excited that you guys are having Tony Esselin to your next one. Anyway, if I'm talking to a group of parents, I will often say to them, look, if your son or your grandson or somebody says, Mom, I think I'm gay, here's what you do. Don't freak out. And secondly, ask him what he means when he says that. Because you don't know what he means when he says that. He might be telling you that all the kids at school think it's cool to be gay. You know, I mean, that may sound strange to you, but that might be what he means. It might mean he's about to hitchhike to the Castro district. It could mean anything in between. You've got to ask him, what do you mean when you're telling me that? You know, and then you're giving him the space to talk about what's true. To me, that's true pastoral practice, is to give people the space to talk about, you know, what they mean. But what's going on in this document with the Synod on the Youth is something I think quite different. It's something quite political going on there. I think we have discovered within the Roman Catholic Church that there are men who are predominantly same-sex attracted, who are using the church for their own purposes, and some of them are using it for doctrinal purposes as well as for their own self-indulgence. I mean, I just think we need to say that there are predatory men using the church for their purposes. What these guys are up to over there and the way they're up to it, couldn't say for sure, but it looks awfully suspicious. And with the amount of cover-up and lack of transparency that there has been in the church, I think a lot of people are looking at this and thinking, you know, we don't need to be having this conversation. Somebody brought it up. Somebody brought it up for a reason. You know, I think people have reason to be suspicious about what's going on with some of those guys.
Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse is founder and president of the Ruth Institute. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason universities. She's senior research fellow in economics for the Acton Institute and author of several books, including her latest, The Sexual State. You can find out more about her new book and the Ruth Institute and all the resources there at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Jennifer, keep up the good work.
Thanks, Todd.
When we come back, it's time to spend some time with Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer. We've been doing a series with him on the conscience in Isaiah. We will conclude that series with him on the other side of the break. Then Terry Mattingly joins us to talk about the media, Blue Dog Democrats, and religion in the midterm elections.
With Western man, there's no going back behind Christ. It's either Christ or it's nothing at all. If it's nothing at all, then he ceases to have any culture or any civilization, properly speaking. His civilization comes to an end.
Dr. Anthony Esselin, author of the best-selling book, Out of the Ashes, talking about his presentation at the Fall 2018 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
But for Western man to know Christ and then to turn away from him, to have his whole civilization built upon the Christian faith, and then to turn away from that, is suicide.
You can meet and hear Dr. Anthony Esselin making the case for Western civilization at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, November 9th and Saturday, November 10th in Dallas, Texas. Attendance is limited to 400. Child care is free. You'll find a conference schedule and you can register at issuesetc.org.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Memoria Press now offers 8 levels of the Simply Classical curriculum for children with special needs. These full-year packages help you teach reading, writing, arithmetic, art and music, poetry, science, history, Latin, classical and Christian studies in incremental and multisensory ways for mastery. visit classicalspecialneeds.com and enter promo code LPR9 to save on resources for your home or school.
The Lord is our shepherd, and we are the people of his pasture. Why then do we still suffer in this life? Disease, loneliness, persecution. I'm Katie Schuerman, and I'm collaborating with Cheryl Swope, Molly Hemingway, and a host of literary friends in He Restores My Soul, a book that takes an honest look at hardship and heartache in light of God's promises found in his word. He Restores My Soul is now available at emmanuelpress.us. EMMANUEL Press.us.